Autumn morning. Autumn morning. The fog descends on my village. It's colder now. The sun has disappeared. Aroma. The aroma of apples, autumn quiet falls behind. The first flake of snow made in my palm. You still remind me of my child. Creator of dreams, I climbed the mountain from the foot. I stopped in the middle of the road for a while to rest. From there I could hear the song of the nightingale coming full of light. I continued to climb, after which I returned from where I left without any remorse, like a new calling as to assume. By the way, the sun is shining, blue sky, clear water, butterflies are flying. And the last poem, passing away, look at the sky, God exists, look at the ground, remember, you will die. Crowds of people walk down the main street. Another is gone, another will be.
Thank you, Constantine. Beat that for a voice if you can, because we're now on the end of the night. Next up is Linda. All right there.
Thank you. That's fine, yeah. If anybody knows me well, they know how much I love to travel and how that influences my poetry. So this is Venice. Invisible silence. In the chapel of stained glass, a Madonna bathes in red and gold. She presses the world between lips of a child, as if pressing a flower between two blank pages. There is a requiem of windows in her eyes. Outside, there is a revolution that does not sleep, hands that turn the night into a map of bones. Thin ribs of bridges arch over waters older than the wind, where at the lagoon, fishermen catch abandoned prayers in their nets. A cleft of light cuts across the room like a razor blade, before losing direction, as if a lost compass. Sometimes I lose direction, wait in invisible silence for the page to be turned. In the labyrinth of alleyways, my shadow sprawls like a bruise across cold stone. The edges curl with uncertainty and heat, as if paper-thin flowers of August bougainvillea. When it rains, the aqua alta carries me to the feet of saints.
Thank you, Linda. It's going to be a great night for voice as well. Now, next up is one of the poets heading to Coventry later in the year as part of the exchange. Please give her a massive round of applause for the nightclub crazy, Catherine Rowan.
Well, I was listening to Anne earlier saying I've heard mentoring my publisher. So my publisher is Revival Press and my book is Elemental Skin. And I'm dedicating this poem to Anne and Amy. It's called Red and White Bones and it's all about Cork. Buttera, Baraka, Pana, home with ham from O'Donovan's for me, ma'am. Pick the plumpest chicken in the window, says me Nan with all the other headscarves. Coats with deep pockets, Lee full of trolleys, grand parade of first dates, I lick me lips, Love outside City Hall ignites 50 years. Vicarstown Inn turns my angel upside down. Bodega jazz sweats through white bricks. Songs rise from the marsh of ancient Cork. South Mall awash with merchant ships laden with fruit for Cuthberts. Tripe, drisheen, kidneys, liver, all smile in Irish Colque or English market. Elizabeth Fort keeps secrets of women sent to roast in a different world for stealing ribbon. Charlie the Bog sings the boys of Fair Hill. Murphy is still in a glass of his own. Donkey jackets play red and white bones. This is Cork Boy. Welcome to the moon! Yeah.
Thanks, Catherine. Especially thank you for reminding Amy that she will need the subtitles when she gets back home. Pure Cork Boy, nothing like it. Now, that's what you call a lasher of yarn. There's pure deer and things all over the gaff. Be doggy wide. Now, next up is, oh, here we go. Lasher of yarn, Margaret O'Regan! Yeah.
Yes. Thanks. This one was written in 1956. It's a very serious poem. It was written by Nazim Hikmet Ren. I come and stand at every door, but no one hears my silent tread. I knock and yet remain unseen, for I am dead, for I am dead. I'm only 7, although I died in Hiroshima long ago. I'm 7 now as I was then. When children die, they do not grow. My hair was scorched by swirling flame. My eyes grew dim. My eyes grew blind. Death came and turned my bones to dust, and that was scattered by the wind. I need no fruit. I need no rice. I need no sweet nor even bread. I ask for nothing for myself, for I am dead, for I am dead. All that I ask is that for peace you fight today, you fight today, so that the children of this world may live and grow and laugh and play. That's it. And don't forget, every Saturday, 1 o'clock, Grand Parade, we march through our streets for Gaza.
Thanks, Mark. What did you say that poet's name is?
I can't pronounce it properly.
All right, you can tell me later on. Yeah. Okay, so we're going online now because we can do that. We can do amazing things in the poetry world these days. We can go online to listen to poets. We can take payments by card machine if you happen to be buying a book tonight. Did I mention that already? Anyway, Jeff, are you there, boy? The man coming to Cork in November, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm right here. Okay, so...
And in November, you'll be right here.
That is right. So mark that on your calendars. So I'll give you one. I don't think I've done it here before, but I could be wrong. Called Google is Your Friend. Hey, you know that new Twitter meme? What new Twitter meme? The one with the kangaroo and the Dr. Pepper bottle. Yeah, what about it? I don't really get the joke. What's it about? Google is your friend. Excuse me? Google is your friend. Why don't you look it up online? I could look it up, but you're right here. I thought you might know. Well, it's not worth my time to explain. Look it up. Okay, fine. By the way, I missed the Jays game last night. You know if they won? Google is your friend. Sorry? Google is your friend. Just look up the score. But you're a Jays fan. I thought you might have watched the game. Yeah, I did, but it's not my responsibility to relay baseball scores to you. I didn't say it was anybody's responsibility, because it isn't. Go look it up like a normal person. Okay, fine, I will. Good. Sure. Now I gotta head to work soon. Oh, okay, how's the company doing? Google is your friend. Hmm? Google is your friend. Look it up on the stock exchange or something. I was just asking out of curiosity. Since you work there, they don't pay me to satisfy your curiosity. That's on you. Look it up. But I was just making conversation. Well, I don't owe you conversation. I don't owe you anything. All right. So there. Why does it offend you so much when I ask you a simple question? It doesn't offend me. I'm not offended. You react as if you are. That's pretty presumptuous of you to assume you know how I feel about anything. I feel fine if you must know. So why do you lash out at me over a question? I'm not lashing out. I'm just doing you the favor of pointing out you can easily look it up. Google is your friend. But Google is so impersonal. Isn't it more fun to ask another human being? Isn't that what human connection is all about? Isn't it more satisfying to share questions and answers and points of view with others, other minds? Isn't it more progressive to have a society that openly asks questions and discusses things with nuance and exploration of ideas instead of just silencing each other? Isn't it? No, it isn't! Okay. I'll tell you what it is. It's a sign of your toxic laziness and immaturity. It's a sign you can't be bothered to take responsibility to stay informed. You're so self-absorbed and devoid of empathy that you're willing to waste other people's time manipulating them with inane questions. I think you need serious psychological help. I think you need to take some time to work on yourself and reconsider the way you treat other people. Until you do that, you should probably stop trying to connect with others since you clearly have no people skills. Oh, all right. I apologize. Do you even know what you're apologizing for? For everything you just said. And I'll work on myself. Sorry, I didn't realize how you felt. Felt about what? About people asking questions. I didn't know you felt that way. Well, Google is your friend. What? Google is your friend. You should already know. If you looked it up, you would have found my blog, which explains everything I feel. Don't you read my blog? You know something? Sure. Google is my friend. Yes, it is. But you sure the fuck aren't. Goodbye. Hey, where are you going? Come back. Oh, why am I always so lonely? Well, at least Google is my friend. That was Google is your friend.
Thanks, Phil. Everybody goes home tonight, thinks I might Google something, go, oh, fuck that. No. Yeah, it's one of those classic things. It's like people Googling, anybody know what time Ovail starts tonight? If you Google what time does Ovail start tonight, you'd fucking already know before you've got around Facebook. No, slight rant there off on a tangent. No, all the way from Douglas at great cost to herself, Mona Lynch.
Fighting colours. I enter her world every week, watch her surrender without regret. But I regret, reach out, touching clouds, grab fragments of our past, getting no response to stories of our adventures. She riding her bike to Crosshaven, where she could swim like a fish, but is now at sea. A teenager, she didn't own a car, but would drive anyone's car to get to Dublin, to the love of her life. A grandmother now, she lives in a puff of smoke. Maria from Kerry sings every song. Ellen sleeps in her comfort chair. Michael takes the mic and Brendan lets him sing his own song. Shiva from India with Elena from Poland wheel in the tea trolley, carefully filling spouted cups with side handles, healthy pink drinks. But from the damp earth's embrace, she coaxed vibrant peonies. Yes, there is a spark, no, a flame. She has style. Like a mannequin in a store, They clothe her stiff limbs every morning as she directs. Each garment must match the other, the shoes, the beads. Though her words dim, her colours never.
Thank you, Mona. That last line might be autobiographical. No, next up is a man who doesn't have a surname because he's a rock star, Rab.
Thanks, Dan. New book. I've been watching the Olympics, RTE, Eurosport, and the BBC. Imagine having the audacity to call your country Great Britain. I mean, seriously, Great Britain. Let's give some other places a prefix, and we begin to appreciate just how ridiculous this is. Amazing America, anyway. Copacetic Canada. Ravishing Russia. Impressive Indonesia. I mean, they don't have to start with the same letter. I was really brainstorming. But no, it's just broken little England, which imported German monarchy. It's inbred fascist aristocracy unchanged since the days of William the Conqueror. And two other nations, along with a bit of somebody else's nation, who, if we're given half a chance, would be calling themselves United Ireland, Wonderful Wales, and Sexy Scotland.
Thank you very much. We'll see if we can get this shit together. This is, I've done this before. Some of you remember it in the distant past, but this is kind of like a mashup of A. Van Vogt, who was the guy who wrote the Nulli universe. Nulli is kind of like non-Aristotelian thinking. His contention was it was Aristotelian thinking which had got us to the fucking mess we're in the first place, all this survival of the fittest shite. Do you know what I mean? So this is the mashup of that and something that I've noticed in Ireland, okay? The map is not the territory, the word is not the thing it represents. Sensations are not reality, but an abstraction of reality. Don't you love to go to concerts at Slane Castle? Oh, that lovely countryside all around, it's private land. The laws of people will never be just until they are sane. Fear's a reaction of the living organism, not the threat but to perception of threat. Don't you love to kiss the bloody stone? Don't you hate to pay? Why you gotta pay anyway? It's a national monument, analyzing the universe in its simple binary opposites, while necessary, has limited value. The function of a tool can be inferred by its design. Well, I think I go to Lismore Castle, I'm gonna take my fishing rod. But no fishing on the Blackwater River, all the way to York. Two objects in the universe. No two events are identical. One or two objects in a class of objects is an individual. But I just keep thinking about Irish castles owned by English lords. What happened in the War of Independence? What happened in that war? A multivariate logic more accurately reflects the complexity of the universe. Such logic is non-Aristotelian or nullity. It's a rejection of hierarchy, a rejection of racism, a rejection of sexism, a rejection of war. All the things that held the Irish caste you'd be fighting for. It's a rejection of racism. I'm done. Thanks.
There you go. That's Rab railing against for the man for so long, he's fucking exhausted from it. I will tell you this, and I know now we have guests from the UK here, but they have a gift for pissing people off. Like, I watch the BBC coverage as well at times, and they announced that Daniel, what's his name, Whiffen, the Irish guy, had won a gold medal, and they announced it as follows. Daniel Whiffen from Northern Ireland, representing the Republic, won a gold medal. Then you just go, fuck's sake, give me a break. You know what I mean? Having said all that, Rab, who's going to be the poster child for the Sexy Scotland campaign? Like, well... I'm not sure even Scotland believes that. Do you know what I mean? Next up is Patricia Walsh.
So now I'm going to follow up with that. Now, this is called Pictures in My Head. The cigarette chain hungrily dines its waters, sent through made to watching, and eventually nude alcohol exposing the hooks in a deranged eye. Illuminations for this day and night that's in it. Mirrors regurgitating a watershed facsimile, avoided for better bearing, the opportune lust. Wall-to-wall entertainment dulls the agony of exclusion. Likeness is falling on a whim. Wanton connections does pass singular pints. Kisses elevate no lowly, past redemption. Light, more light, hurtling towards hell. Satisfactory gestures water down the cream. Yes meaning no, cleaning up any confusion. Taking things as read, a steely purpose. Cerebral dramas resuscitating sorrow. Galvanizing night sweats at the top of the game. Repeated massacres on the plane of the mind. Forbidden templates soldier on regardless. Excluding all others, mapped in his own agony. Punching falls like a galgame retreat. The singular demise, retrograde revenge. Simple twists reverberating through wildlife. Fear of feeling, blood in the still heart. Parallel life. Not garnering any awards. Yes.
Thanks, Patricia. I'm always worried when a poet decides to write something about pictures in the head, you're going to go, oh, this could go anywhere, but well done. No, this next man keeps turning up to our Vale, even though he, at one point in his life, and maybe still, believes there's no culture in Cork. Colm Scully.
Thanks, sir. You probably heard of Frank O'Hara. He was a famous New York poet back in the 60s. And he used to write an awful lot of poems about New York. And I write an awful lot of poems about Cork. So someone said to me about 12 months ago, you could be the Frank O'Hara of Cork. Here goes. The Frank O'Hara of Cork. I'll go into town with my notebook, as if it was a camera, and sit upstairs in Bean and Leaf, just out inside the gorgeous bay window, looking out over Grand Parade. No one will suspect a notebook. I'll sit and sketch pen pictures of all the characters, The inaction of Friday morning coffee time. As if I'm going about photographing everyone like a Chinese tourist might. Snapping pictures of drunks, dingbats, pretty women and suntops. It's not illegal, you know, photographing public places. Surely it must be lawful to write it down. No one cares about books or paper. There's no thumbprint. Untraceable. As long as you don't sign your name. But maybe a guard will be called by one of the staff. Or by that Brazilian goddess over there, filing her nails into a coffee cup. He'll arrive by bike and trudge upstairs, his puffy high-vis jacket, tight cloth pants, industrial boots, as if he's going to dig a garden. Come over to me, as to a loitering teenage boy. Now move along, please. You can't be writing about people in public. I know, you know me, we've been through this before. Please now, just give me the notebook quietly. He takes my notebook, opens where the red velvet ribbon marks the page. But officer, or garda, how do I address him? I'm doing nothing wrong. I'm just recording life like Frank O'Hara did. I've been told I'm the Frank O'Hara of Cork, or could be. He looks at me quizzically. Who's Frank O'Hara? He asks. I guess I'm caught. Nobody, I say, and stand up, leaving him my notebook full of truths, slinking away into the knot of streets that moments before I was trying to undo.
Windy. Thanks, Colin. Class as always, but Frank O'Hara, huh? Brilliant. Now, online, Wendy is next. Are you there, Wendy? You got volume?
Volume? Hello.
Hiya.
Hi. Right, this is a poem I wrote when the Russians were invading... oh, my gosh. I've gone all nervous. We're invading Ukraine. And I was thinking of those poor soldiers who had been made to go and fight a war on both sides that didn't want to fight. And this is called On to War. With shoulders hunched onwards to war, the uniform stiff and dull, the thought of killing haunting the mind, the tragedy yet to come. Anticipation, obliteration, give me a drink of vodka. This may be the last time I'll ever dance the troika. Head bowed down in cognized shame, my mummy wouldn't like it. To justify such callous acts, I juggle into madness. Anticipation, obliteration, give me a drink of vodka. This may be the last time I will ever dance the troika. Weapon freezing, hands like ice, humanity drained from my blood. Sieved and replaced with stone hard coal, whatever happened to love. Anticipation, obliteration, give me a drink of vodka. This may be the last time I will ever dance the troika. Permissions denied, my hands are tied. My emotions strung on a barbed wire divide. Anticipation, obliteration, give me a drink of vodka. This may be the last time I will ever dance the troika. Thank you. And this is just a short one that I wrote recently that I haven't performed anywhere before. It's called Comfort. I hold my hands to my face to comfort me. Oh, precious Cupid face. Soft and elfin-like, cheekbones supported by fingers that feels hugged too. My face emitting energy, living, pulsing, rest for my weary head that I didn't know was tired. In that embrace, caring hands and caring face that holds a lot of stress. Letting go with gentle tears of a life lived, full of interactions Let the elbows take the strain. They're strong and anchoring. More tears and sighs. Strong enough to let it out. The elbows in play takes away the sensitivity of pure skin on skin. The whole body as a unit is strong. My hands cupping my face warms my loneliness and nourishes my very being. Thank you.
Thanks, Wendy. What a wonderful contrast between the two pieces. Now, up next is Michelle Delay.
Congratulations to this vast community for feeding the beast 700 times. It's amazing. Thanks so much, Paul. Again. I'm going to, I'd like to read a tribute for the late Owen French, who was sadly lost last weekend. And I'm sorry if this is news to anyone who might have known him. He was great, very supportive, a tutor of mine in architecture and colleague for a while. He had a fascinating delicacy to all of his work, and he was a very successful music artist as well. And like every good lyricist, probably a very unsung poet. So I want to read one of his songs, which is called In Time. R.I.P. Owen. I set a fire to the moon's shape. We are just shadows in the cascades of history. Defeated love and then your war games, the sky released. I set our bodies on my long shore. This heavy whisper makes me more scared than anything. I was loved and now that love's lost. I know they'll never find us way out amongst the madness. I feel free in time. Fall depths with me miles apart. In light we solve our whole lives. In time you breach the brightest parts. A light we fall. You pry me thumping from this long drop. My twisted body in a bind that you want to break. This house is covered in your blood sport. Don't give a fuck what's taken. I hear there's wars worth making. I just leave in time. Fall depths with me miles apart. In light we solve our whole lives. In time you breach the brightest parts. A light we fall. So lay down our lips, all our mumbles, they are fabled. Bind it all up and cast it out into the night. And I sense all your omens. You are young, you are able. We drop from the sky and fill our lungs to feel alive. In time, fall depths with me miles apart. In light, we solve our whole lives. In time, you breach the brightest parts. Light, we fall in time. Come on, Riff.
Thanks, Michelle. A lovely tribute and a beautiful piece, actually, a beautiful piece. We're back to the rock stars. Roxanne.
You're never tired of making that joke, aren't you?
No.
And you never will. So, I picked whichever notebook when I came. And I haven't been writing for a long time, so this is once again something from last year. This is from September. And I want to give a shout out to Mona, who hugged me so tight when I read that last year. Thank you. It's called Obstacles. You won't find me. I won't let you get under my skin. Not anymore. You got me. You tricked me. You trapped me. You almost took me. Not anymore. I escaped, broke free, disappeared into the twilight, the darkness of winter. I stayed away so long, but still nearly fainted when seeing you in the street. Tried to control the bumping of my heart and my teary eyes. I flew to refuge. You wouldn't know, you're oblivious, but I'm not. I could scream your name or our address. but I vanish. The watchwork were safety and recovery. A quiet neighborhood, new families, shields to the past. But I want to dance. I need to dance. I might bump into you though. Deep breath. Let's go. Despite my prayers, fates decide against it. You are here. You are oblivious, but I'm not. I became the phoenix you couldn't foresee. You played me, manipulated me to the core of my passions. Bravo, that's impressive. But God forbid, it's over. Your skin turns velvet while staring blankly. No, while I stare blankly. Do you want to dance? No. No scream, no time to take offense, just a fact. You're so mad and I'm loving it. I still remember your hand on my waist and your fakeness. It won't happen. I was Roxanne for a few. I'll be Roxanne for everyone, everywhere. Only my tribe will know the real me. I won't wish you hell, though you clearly deserve it. I just pray that when the time comes, your heaven will be different than mine. Thank you very much.
Now, Roxanne, shall I have to keep calling you Rockstar when you're reading stuff like that? That was absolutely brilliant. And what a last line. Jesus, brilliant. Now, next up is a man who has been to Coventry, Benjamin Burns.
Coventry was lovely, actually. I really liked the squirrels. And I'm a big fan of Delia Derbyshire. So,
yeah.
Yeah. At the music museum, and there was all the two-tone stuff. I was like, yes. Passing that all by. Like, yeah, whatever. Delia Derbyshire, yeah, her radio stuff was there. This poem is about the sauna.
Coventry?
No, I haven't been to the sauna in Coventry. I must go back for the sauna. This is about the sauna in Sligo and Estonia, and my friend Jan, but also like the kind of extreme changes that go through you in the sauna. I didn't think I'd like the sauna, but now I do. It's called Changes of State. Held by a silence the sauna itself is complicit in, Jan reaches across to cast a ladle of water on the stones, and I evaporate, in an instant shrink, to ascend as a multitude of minuscule droplets in a hot burst of steam, bone marrow rarefied to mist, muscles once tense, untensing in wisps from trapezii at the nape of my neck to solei of my lower calves, memories at play across the surface of a puddle broken by a child's two-footed splash, bright yellow wellies reflected in the hissing sky where water never settles but hurtles back into the deep Atlantic salt rinse to cavort with seals, their dark eyes observant for the glimmer of fish as molecule to molecule the netting between things tightens.
That was kind of brilliant, Ben. Interesting how we're so different. I went into the two-tone museum and I was just all, actually when I heard about it, I said to Rafe, I have to go, I just have to go. I didn't know Daly existed until I got to that. But that's where we all are. No, the next girl has also been to Coventry. We're in a bit of a role now. Sue. Hello.
Well, thank you very much, Stan, and thanks for this beautiful night. Yeah, I was in Coventry last year, and this feels like passing the baton. Before I go into this poem, I'd like to send out an invite. I'm still running the Blue Mondays writing group, and we're open for members all the time. We run on the first Monday of the month on Zoom, where we focus on critiquing the word in detail, and we run on the third Monday of the month here in person, where we focus on performance and critiquing each other on performance. So it's a feedback group, and it lives off the feedback of everyone that's participating in it. We stand on each other's shoulders, and here is a warm welcome into the group. If you're interested, approach me and I'll include you in the details and the communication. So this was one of the pieces that was workshop not too long ago, and a lot of you might know it. Precious poison. Your fragrance spackles dry across my sultry tongue. Acerbity strings taste buds. The sharpness of your fire patches craving throat. Lips tighten as tart liquid bites, tantalizing my senses. Your caress trickles down in a crisp, clean zest. 10 minutes of your tempting touch of tangy tannins, and the rain goes fuzzy. Unhinged, reason lingers lazily. Thoughts turn tipsy, wild, frazzled and uncontrolled, rolling through cerebral folds. Dizzy spells dazzle all clarity of mind. Faint notes of your flower, velvet poison pearls, sizzling, light-bodied across my palate. The juicy spice of your berry adds flames to my sweetness. My breath heats, moistens, unfurls under your influence. As boundaries fall, laced, and my lips untie in a smile. You got me, spinning, reeling, roused in a swirling embrace. Precious poison.
Thanks to both the poem and the reminder about the Blue Mondays thing still being alive. Now, Alexandra is next, coming all the way from behind the bar.
Hi,
so today I came with a Hungarian poem again. Because before I thought that like a lot of people seem to enjoy the language, and I think it has been a while since I came with a Hungarian poem. I think it was like Winter Warm is the last time I read one. So this poem was actually written from my mother for Mother's Day, which was written back in May, because in Hungary, Mother's Day is actually held on the first Sunday of every May. So that's a little information there. And in Hungarian, this poem, it sounds a lot nicer because it's actually a rhyming poem, which is something that I usually don't do. So in English, like the translated version, I tried to do my best, but like a lot of sections seem out of place because just the storyline is a bit all over the place because it's not really rhyming. So it will sound a bit funny some parts, but I tried. So, menedék, drága édesanyám, mondok ám, amit elmondanám. Tudnék-e, mennyit jelentesz, te engem ettel sosem feszítesz. Kis babád már nagy lány, de ha nem lennél már velem, ott lenne magány. Apró gyengéd lélek vagyok, de szeretetet néked adok. Ha bánat van szívedben, én ott állok helyben. Gyere sírj vállamon, ha nem ma, akkor másnapon. Adok néked vigaszt, ha bármi bánt, bármi fáraszt. Ott leszek veled, míg a békét meg nem leled. Nem vagy nékem teher, hisz sírtam karodban már ezerszer. Drága édesanyám, mondókámat elmondanám. Tudnék-e, mennyit jelentesz, te engemet el sosem veszítesz. Nélküled lelkem törött lenne, életen átmenni szívem rettegne.
hisz te nékem lelki támasz vagy, mikor az élet időnként serben hagy. De te ott lett állsz készen, hogy engemet tartsál az ösvényen. Nem vesztem el önmagam, mert te mindig újra töltötted poharom. Régen vízzel, most épp sörrel, józanul vagy részegen harcoltunk a széllel. Néha lázadtunk az ég ellen, de aztán kacagva nevettünk a holdfényben. Egyszer lent, egyszer fent. Az életen hajózni át, bármilyen agyament. Drága édesanyám, mondókámat elmondanám. Tudnék-e, mennyit jelentesz, te engemet el sosem veszítesz. Ha nékem vagy a vigasz, te nékem meg a tavasz. Hozzád bármikor mennék, mert lányomnak te vagy a menedék. And then this would be the potential translation. So this poem is called Shelter. My dearest sweet mother, I'd like to tell you my rhyme. For you to know how much you mean to me, you will never ever lose me. Your little baby has grown up, but if you would no longer be with me, I would feel true loneliness. I'm a little tender soul, but I give you my love. When there is sorrow in your heart, I'll be standing by you. Come cry on my shoulder. If not today, I'll still be there another day. I will give you my comfort where anything hurts, anything upsets you. I will be there with you till you find true peace again. You are not a burden to me. How could you be when I have cried in your arms 1,000 times? My dearest sweet mother, I'd like to tell you my rhyme. For you to know how much you mean to me, you will never ever lose me. Without you, my heart would be broken. If I had to go through life without you, my heart would feel terrified. When life sometimes betrays me, you are a spiritual support. You stand there ready to guide me through the right path again. I never lost myself because you always refilled my glass. In the past with water, now with beer. We fought the wild winds, whether we were sober or drunk. We rebelled against the sky, then laughed in the moonlight. We sailed through life and whatever craziness it gave, whether life put us up or put us down. My dearest sweet mother, I'd like to tell you my rhyme. For you to know how much you mean to me, you will never ever lose me. Where I am the comfort to you, you are the spring to me. I will reach for you anytime because you are your daughter's shelter. Thank you.
Thanks, Alexandra. You could have saved yourself all the hassle of telling this whole translation didn't work, because you're talking through your ass, if you don't mind me saying so. That was brilliant. Thank you very much indeed. And I love the Hungarian. I love coming here and listening to other languages, so bring more of that. Now, next up is the one and only Mr. Philip Spillane.
Thank you. Sorry. So, again, I'm obsessed with the ever-growing embroidery on our tapestry, the motorway, and on the toll on the M8. I noticed last year that on the toll plaza where you pay your 250 coins, and it's going up every year, unfortunately. Those swallows all over it. It was beautiful. They had a big city up there. But this year they have not come back. Like, it's completely naked. And I wrote a poem about it in the springtime, looking forward to seeing them, but they didn't come back. And there might be a number of different reasons why, but one of the reasons why is in the poem. There might be another reason, but I don't want to talk about that one. So yeah, this is a sister poem to the one I wrote in spring, and I might make a few of these. I might work on this a bit more as time goes on. In the underside of summer, the swallows had not come back. The tall rafters are left stark, and it's too damp. Misplaced drizzles and confusing stormy showers has left the soil soft and soggy. In my Nissan, it charges at 199 kilometers per hour, and then it swoops by me, Sparrowhawk, fierce, and hazel. It lands on the estranged birch trees that call the hard shoulder their home. I focus back on the road, but it's made me feel connected to nature in my aluminium car home. Does the kayak hide under the flyover over the black water? Does Era live beyond the Fomoy Viaduct, straight into the eye of the horizon? Or does everything have gone into the dusk, 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 into the dusk? I dream in the dusk. If I close my eyes hard enough, I see dusk.
Thanks, Philip. There's an insight into the mind, into the mind, into the mind, into the mind of Philip Spillane. Now.
Where's that? Where's your shorts?
Where's my shorts? It's a very fucking personal question, right? A very personal question in a public environment, like. Jesus. I mean, I'd say a guard wouldn't ask me that, but they do normally. No, let's move on. So the next man is going to Coventry. He's got two jobs when he goes to Coventry. One is to entertain the people he's reading for, which is not a problem. And the second one is to keep Catherine on all the fucking nightclubs, which is a huge problem. Cedric! Cedric!
Yeah, I'm happily overrated. I don't know if any of you had this kind of itch sometimes when you find words that are interesting and you want to make puns with them, and you don't get the opportunity of just using all the puns and they stay with you and, you know, scratches them. You need to scratch that itch. Yeah, a bit obsessive, I know, but I know you don't have lucky.
No,
you.
It's not obsessive at all. Everyone's fucking healthy.
So the 5-word challenge was very much like that. So I decided to just try and write another piece using whatever was left of it in my mind. And that old habit I had as a kid of sneaking around and the vivid dreams that I had doing so. It's called The Lair. The voice speaks in the microphone.
There is only one person for the job. You must find them. When you arrive, make sure to greet the warden with a password and his tool. Pay no mind to the dog at the entrance of the mine. Don't make. Let the beat guide you. Do not look around. Walk straight through the crowd. If you look like a tourist, running faster than an Olympian would do you no good. There are no people, only predators and prey. All kind of vibe, all the way to the bar where you are headed. Once there, ask for a Bloody Mary. Do not pick the drink. Check for the prices. Ignore the spice rate. No hesitation. Let them take you to the right place. Play the game. Stand to their beat. Once there, you're all by yourself. It will be all piracy, lies on quartz, concentrants, appreciate the music, but the chat. You won't get out of your heart for this. The mind goes silent, except for static noise. The rave is going strong, all trance music and flashes of colors and lights, glowing from the evil mouth of the mind. I know I'm dreaming, but right now I could use the bathroom.
Lovely, Sidri. They did a study that, you know, when kids are sitting in front of television and they suddenly want to go to the toilet. So that's what that reminded me. As a child, you can suppress the muscles in your body that tell you you need to go to the toilet until you're absolutely desperate when you're involved in something that's using your imagination or shutting your brain down. So there's a good reason you needed to go to the bathroom. Yeah. Now, next up is Ben Thompson.
Yes. I don't know if any of you have ever come across the White Rose. The White Rose were a group of students who distributed leaflets against the Nazis, against Hitler. And they actually were at a very critical stage of the war, because Hitler was just losing badly in Leningrad, and the Nazis were very keen not to have any rebellions on their hands, and there actually were some quite strong student demonstrations in Munich. A lot of women students demonstrated against being told they ought to get down and dirty with the Sturmführers and produce more Sons for the Third Reich, you know, and they stormed out of the lecture. So, but anyway, three of the members of the White Rose were caught distributing leaflets at Munich University, and they were given a kangaroo trial, and they were executed at Stadelheim by a guillotine, which was still operative then. So this poem is for them, called In Memoriam White Rose. Epiphany at Nuremberg. In that scotoma between two histories, the air was hissing with tiny poisons. Each word carried a hornet sting. Even simple truth could not be told. For the skin of evil is the killing fields, but the core of evil is the shrinking heart, burning of books, erasure of every critical thought. You turned the opening buds of youth away from the Nazi sun to become pale, hunted petals, white roses of the night. Reading your letters now, full of the mystery of the stars, stories of children and family cares, I see a shadow slide across the page, the light devouring edge of an eclipse, shadow of the blade at Stadelheim, which even as you wrote was being honed for you, and how you walked into that shadow, cupping your lanterns, their tender lights frail against the dark. How Hans sat in a church at twilight, hearing his own future in a passion by Bach, the betrayal, the washing of the hands, the Judas purse become 3,000 marks. You, lovers of Schubert, readers of Hölderlin and Rilke, sleepers in the Nazi whale, shocked awake to find the waters of madness washing into its throat, drowning the music, twisting your language, a frenzy, boiling, laying Europe waste. So you stood up and spoke. Someone had to start. You spoke for those who had no voice. You showed that under the packed snow, green grass still grew. And because in their hearts they knew you were right, they drowned you out with shouts of traitor, traitor. Strange to come across you now, I half awake and half asleep upon the golden pillow of old age. You, a brilliant light, sharp as a reflection from a falling blade, shining from the darkness of those days, to cast the shadow of the reaper on my wall. For I had always thought of death as a dark gate, But now as I draw near, I am amazed and comforted by those who crowd that gate to bring me cheer. Hans, who saw the light at Nuremberg, Christoph, surprised dying was so easy, and Sophie, remembered still as bravest of the brave, who walked across that room from life to death at Stadelheim, still with a flower tucked behind her ear.
Thanks, and I actually recently came across the story of the White Rose. Ian McKeown has a book called Lessons, which I read in it, and there's a large chunk of it about that. Thanks for that. It's really important to remember those kind of people who stood up when things were really difficult. To paraphrase Einstein, it's, you know, if we don't stand up, then that's probably a bigger crime than being involved. Now, next up is Emma Glynn. Is that the right surname? Yeah.
I'm just tall.
All right, okay. Would have been much better if you'd said you're just small, which you did.
Usually I write really sad stuff, but this actually isn't sad, so like, good for you guys. Also, I've been writing a lot recently, but I brought the wrong copy, so this is old. So it's like one time I was happy in the past. So okay. Grateful attitude will help your mood to improve. If you focus on what you lack, that's what you will attract. There's nothing difficult about it. In fact, it is simple if you think about it, attention on what you have. In place of feelings that drag you into space of desire for what the other may have acquired, do not be fooled. With that mindset, even if you obtain it, you will complain and drain it of novelty energy it may exude. Ooh, did that hurt you, make you think a bit? I'm not preaching, I'm just speaking from experience. Once you have it and you grab it, there'll be something else. You've got to reflect on this habit, grow fond of yourself. Yeah, no one's perfect. Of course, we have our discrepancies. Becoming fond of yourself will gift you with ongoing ease. So maybe this is a worthy practice for you to do. Take some time aside just to express your gratitude. Thank you.
Thanks, Seymour, and thanks for the comedy at the start as well. It's always nice to be reminded that I'm small. I'm 5'10", but that is small. In today's modern world, that is very small for a man in this modern world, and I'm glad you reminded me. Thank you so much. It was always one of my pet loves was to be reminded of my flaws. Thank you so much. Now, Cahill Holden is next. I think Cahill was in Coventry last year as well, was he? Yes. A room full of expats from Coventry at the stage.
I let them all over. Yeah.
Brad would like everybody to know that he was also in Coventry, but nobody has mentioned it yet.
See, that's the problem with the Scottish being impatient. I was saving that for the end, Rab, to make a big deal of it. Yes, sexy bastard. Yeah.
Just going to leave this there. We lost 1-0 to Stoke the other day.
Yay! Yay!
Woo! So I got two teeny weeny poems and then one shortish poem. So this one is for everybody going to Lecce Picnic this weekend.
Yeah.
There once were two ants on a hill who found half an ecstasy pill. They raved on that height for a day and a night, but when they came down, they were ill. Thank you. And this next one is for all of my lovers of metaphysics and vegetables.
Yeah!
Woo!
Woo! There once were two peas in a pod who debated the nature of God. One thought that he was the prince of peas, the other liked Satan a lot. Thank you. And this one is a poem I wrote in the smoking area of De Barra's during the Coventry Exchange last year. This was hastily finished and it has remained in the same state, but I do dig it, it's a good one. I pulled on my first sky blue crown. Let me take that one more time. I pulled on my first sky blue crest about a year after Robbie Keane left. It was 2001, around the same time Dre dropped 2001, a year after City dropped to League One. I didn't know that. I was 10. 2 days before Christmas, at the match with Dad and my new granddad and his friend Ken, who got us tickets for free. Nice one, Ken. Dead sound. Ken was later done for embezzling club funds, so every Christmas after that, my ticket said, youth entry, £16. Look, I'll be honest, I didn't really like football. I liked to read books. But sure, look, I'd never had a granddad, so I was delighted to go in my new sky blues down to Highfield Road. And we beat Bradford 4-0. I felt like I'd taken a child-sized pill. And for every match ever after, Mick sent a programme over. And I read them from cover to cover to cover. Augie and Shaw, Chippo and Hadji, and Irish players too. Phil Babs and Carsley. You could tell they were ours because they were terrible usually. Then after the match, it was back to the gaff that smelled of Pear soap and Marlboro Silvers. For a few Christmases later, I got drunk for the first time on Stella and cold VB bitters, where Jean did huge Yorkshire puddings, ham, turkey and gravy. I pretended to like the mustard-coloured jumper she made me. Again, years later, I realised was a treasure. It's where we left the graveyard to lay down Mick's body and tins of Guinness in the Legion, a field for the poppies. I'm more James McLean now, but then I rolled with the posse. It was there where I last saw my cousin Tom, who left too young. We caught up on Christmas and then he was gone. And Jean died in December and the graveyard was cold. A few months later, the house Mick built was sold. I wish them all rest, but praise on their souls. My memory is sky blue, twist, sing with me. It smells of Pear soap and cigarettes in Coventry City. Thank you.
Quality, Cahill. I remember you reading that in De Barra's last year, actually. Quality.
There's no football gets into your blood.
Now, next, we're going back online. This man will be physically here on the 9th of September. This is Massimo.
Hey, always such a huge honor to be here. And, you know, thank you for inviting me to come next month. I'm very much looking forward to it. So, I don't always know what is the right thing, but that doesn't mean that I do not know what is the right thing. If it's something I don't want to do, is it the right thing? Should it be a good thing before it is the right thing? If I am wrong, is something wrong with the right thing? Or would I be fine if I'd have gone with the right thing? But dwelling on a past wrong is not the right thing. If the present moment is never wrong to do the right thing. It's like a road through a forest that I walk through. I know where I walk, but not always where I walk to. May I find good at the end and goodness all through, and may the road lead back to home as it ought to, as I choose what I do or don't want to, or sometimes it's better just to want to and not do. I make wishes, but I'm glad they're not all true. To get all my wishes may make me wish not to. So to whom do I turn for right guidance, to gain good advice with right words or right silence? Who could know what the right place or right time is if I'm not always sure where I am or what the time is? Is there a wise one who sits at the highest, or do I just hope so because I'm not the wisest? Or should I drop these religious disguises and turn to the real people here I've grown wise with? Because there is no greater teacher than another human. You can listen to them watching what they're doing. You will find out more by asking them than just assuming if every person is a mystery with no conclusion. Ask for their views, they may share what they're viewing. They may show ways only their steps have proven. They may stop and talk or they may keep it moving. But there is no teacher like people communing. If most of us don't know beyond the sky we're standing under, but limits that we share help us understand each other. Any words of wisdom I could try to hand another, I am not the first or last child, woman, man to utter. Because to the world, I'm a son, a friend, and a brother. But to myself alone, I am one and am no other. I may seem to stand apart, but cannot stand asunder. Because like you, I do not know and almost cannot stand the wonder. My only point of faith is where I'm from, is where I'm headed. And may my destination make up for reasons I have rested. All the good I've done and all the pleas I have surrendered, that something can mend all the deeds left unmended. Just to be faithful, you don't have to be demented. Religion may be man-made, but faith is not invented. Born from a need and a place to feel protected, to know that the steps we can't see are still directed. So if any time I should fall or I should falter, and following the stars does not get me any farther, I pray to the essence of my mother and my father, and the hand that they gave before I had a hand to offer. And if I need a hand that no one else can offer, I pray to a love that needs no other at the altar, where I'm the only visitor and I'm the only caller, like a root that still holds still through flowing water. But still I grow as I flow with the water too, getting lost in its reflection as I often do. But who could ever say dreaming something not to do, if even an illusion can be truthful to an honest view? To love to dream doesn't mean something's wrong with you, but a dream is better to be seen than be lost into. Like a child, I was playing with a thought or two, and then grew into a man who does not know what he has got into. But through all I've gotten through, something got me through, a force that brought me up and came down and caught me too. A grace that's not only amazing, but it's also true, to help me remember that to do right is not wrong to do. It matters too much to me to just say whatever, if life is too intelligent to not come back together. It is not a weakness to hope life is for the better, nor is it a lying heart that loves the world that I remember. It is not a crime to want to fall in love and love forever, nor is it betrayal to change my mind in changing weather. It is not a crime to pray for help and then surrender, nor is it betrayal to seek the answer from the questioner. So I meditate hard on the right thing, but why should it seem hard to just do the right thing? Still, I know the difference from the wrong and the right thing. Is it good? Is it true? Then maybe it's the right thing. Hey, thank you all so much. Peace and love.
Thanks, Massimo, and we look forward to seeing you here in September. Perfect timing on that poem as well, because our final reader on the 700th Old Avail was in the frigging toilet while you were reading, and I was sitting there going, he
nobody,
fuck.
Nobody would have known if you
had it. Well, you see, if you weren't, yeah, but if you weren't, so I was sitting there watching the toilet going, he better get his fucking ass out here. Before Massimo finishes, and you did just in time. He is a man who has closed many an novel. He's a man who was also in Coventry, not with Rab, but a different time to Rab. Rab went to Coventry. Does anybody know that? Rab was in Coventry. One of the very first visitors to Coventry. So closing the 700 novel is Kieran McCartan. And he is caught.
Thanks a lot, Stan. Me and Stan were Coventry buddies.
Ah,
going over there, and what a laugh. I was well impressed, I have to say. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And I was really impressed also that they have a Coventry Peace Festival. That was the thing that was most striking to me, that the name of the festival was the Coventry Peace Festival, and a place that was leveled by the Blitz and such. I think it's really important to recognize how important, or how great that it is that you have a peace festival. Massive congratulations to Ovea on 700 nights.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. Absolutely unreal. Jeez, but where would we be if Ram wasn't heckling us even before we started? Like, you know what I mean? Jesus Christ. Like. Anyway, you've been unreal to listen to tonight, the other 69. on the other 699 nights would be proud of you. Anyway, I'm just going to say this quick poem, and thanks a lot. Sorry, Rap. I hope you were writing this down. First roll of the ballpoint. You have more options, but less respect. A song and a dance for what's offered you, but what you bring to them is weighed so lightly, I almost floated in here on a cloud of good fortune. I put my trousers on one leg at a time this morning, just like any other, and the fact I've walked them in here means I'm worth the bother. Where does it land in the light of your eyes that I should stand on your carpet? Am I a guest or an intruder? Someone wanting something or a capable agent of desire and will? An ally. The standard, the worth of my humanity as perceived by you, is the worth of humanity, and if you or anyone automatically thinks lowly of it, lowly it will be. Thank you.
Good man, Kieran. I'd forgotten Coventry's a Peace Festival. Thanks for the reminder. No. We have reached the end. Big thank you to, well, Alexandra's not there, but we thank you anyway for being behind the bar and contributing. Big thanks to everybody who contributed to the 5-word challenge. Big thanks to the anyone who's on the open mic. Huge thank you to Paul Casey for keeping this thing going to reach its 700th night. And finally, can we have a large thank you to the women who's parcels have Tourette's. And the woman who wants to know, has England got a day of independence? And we have a massive round of applause for our Coventry poets and Amy.